We're remembering the anniversary of Act 10 here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. This is a look back over the decades since former Governor Scott Walker's controversial landmark law gutted collective bargaining for most state and municipal employees, including K-12 teachers. How has Act 10 affected your life? What is its legacy? How has Act 10 helped or hurt your school district? Are you seeing benefits from teachers receiving merit pay? 800-642-1234. Justin Delfaz is president of the Green Bay Education Association, which represents paraprofessionals and teachers in Green Bay Public Schools. Justin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, Kate. Thank you for having me.
We also have Angelina Cruz, who holds the same position at Racine Educators United, representing Racine Public School teachers. Angelina, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, Angelina, let's start with you. A decade later, what are the lasting effects of Act 10 on Racine schools?
I don't think Racine is unique in terms of our situation. I think schools across the state have been grappling with a massive exodus of teachers from the profession, early retirements, instability in terms of, being able to deliver instruction in the context of this free market approach to teaching students and to compensating professional educators. So people are doing what they need to do to, support their own families. And it's created this instability of teachers moving from district to district or altogether leave the profession. And so we know that important to children's growth and learning is stability, is a stable environment. And so I would say that this has definitely created challenges within not just Racine, but across, whether we're talking about our urban districts like Racine and Green Bay or our rural districts as well. We have a lot more in common that we're struggling with than I think we talk about very often.
Justin, what do you hear there in Angelina? What other changes in Green Bay schools have you noticed that you can connect to Act 10?
Yeah, I would echo some of the same comments that Angelina made. After Act 10, we saw a huge influx of retirements, which, we lost some really good veteran teachers that were leaders in their buildings, that were leaders in our district. And it's really been hard to recover from that because of this free agent market that's been created. There's not as much of an incentive for teachers to stay in a particular district. So there's been a lot of movement, which has led to a lack of stability. We're all well aware of the teacher shortage. There's not as many people going into education. So I know as a union, we have really tried to shift our focus to trying to solve some of these problems. Recently, this past Saturday, actually, and we had a follow-up Tuesday, and we have a follow-up tonight, we did a trauma-informed care professional development for our teachers because they're obviously going through a lot of trauma right now with COVID, and we're just trying to make them feel supported so they stay in the profession. We've started working with NEA for early career learning labs to support our new teachers so they stay in the profession. We are collaborating with our district with something called Centers, which is collaboration to ensure new teachers' retention and success. So really trying to encourage people to go into education, and then once they're in education, to stay. I would say the biggest issue that we're facing is that teacher shortage.
We're going to get to more on the shortage and more on teachers returning to the classroom amid COVID in just a moment. I want to reintroduce you both. Justin Delfaz is from Green Bay. Angelina Cruz from Racine. We're looking at the 10-year anniversary of Act 10 with these two leaders of teachers' unions. with your thoughts as well on Act 10, 800-642-1234. Angelina, Act 10 supporters had hoped the law would allow school leaders to become more nimble in responding to their budget crunches or other challenges when things would come up in the district without the need to bargain. What is your response to that?
To be frank, I think that was maybe a talking point that they necessarily did not believe themselves. So I think it's important to note that unions are more important now today than they ever have been. Today's economy is rigged against working class people in favor of the wealthy and powerful. And I think Act 10 is the perfect example of politicians who do the bidding of wealthy and powerful and have written the economic rules to favor their own interests rather than working class people. So this was very much an intentional attack upon working class people in the state of Wisconsin, specifically public servants, specifically women. And I would argue also the drastic cuts to public education is an attack on children. And so I don't believe that talking point. I don't believe there's any sincerity behind wanting to improve what is happening in our public schools.
Let's bring in Jesse now, joining us from the northeast part of the state. Jesse, hi. What would you like to say about Act 10?
Good morning. Well, I think Angela just pretty much wrapped up all of my thoughts, actually. But, you know, I wish I could hold my call for Governor Walker, but I don't have time. I think it was clearly an example of his view on education, or that lack of. I think the idea that we wanted to promote this as merit-based, but then didn't give the schools budgets, and in fact cut their budgets to pay that merit, is just a ridiculous concept. And I think Angela's absolutely right. I think this was completely done to benefit the wealthy and say, well, you know what, they'll figure it out, because the truth is teachers are passionate and they care and they love what they do. And so they are. They're figuring it out, but at what cost? And the cost is our children and our children's education and the next generation. So the idea that we don't value teachers enough to pay them for the important role they have in our children's life is a huge statement, in my opinion.
Jesse, thanks. Justin, how did Act 10 affect the income of teachers immediately after the law and in the years since?
Yeah, we have, you know, some veteran teachers that were around during, you know, Act 10 that are, you know, basically at the point now, finally 10 years later, where they were at when Act 10 took place. You know, we look at the CPI max that were that's all we're allowed to bargain up to. And if you look at it for next year, it's barely over 1%. So teachers, when we talk about raises, they're not getting raises. At best, they are getting a cost of living increase to match the consumer price index. And that's at best. So, you know, we also see the districts moving more of the salary structure down to entice, because there's a shortage, entice young teachers into the profession. But then there is not a lot of room for growth once you get into the profession. So that's why we see a lot of people going into education as a starting career now. And they might teach for 5-6 years. And then they realize that they're, you know, never going to really increase a great deal in salary. So they leave for another profession. So it's really led more to that teacher shortage. And, you know, I would even argue that, you know, we mentioned before about how Act 10, you know, has allowed districts to be more nimble. You know, I've even had conversations with district administrators that missed the days that we had a contract that was worked on for years because it covered almost every single scenario. Things were black and white. You were able to look at this contract. People were treated fairly because it was right there, black and white in the contract. And now we have so many gray areas, you know, with more of a vague handbook that has led to issues as well. But,
and we're talking with Justin Delfaz, who holds the president position at the Green Bay Education Association, representing paraprofessionals and teachers in Green Bay public schools. Angelina Cruz with us, president of Racine Educators United, the labor group representing teachers in Racine. Were you a teacher who left your profession due to Act 10? Where are you now? What questions do you have for the presidents of teachers unions? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. You're with us for this Act 10 anniversary look back on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A decade ago, the sound of tens of thousands of protesters on the steps of our state capitol.
Tell me what democracy looks like! Tell me what democracy looks like!
Governor Walker's landmark law sharply reduced collective bargaining rights for public employees. It required teachers to pay more toward their retirement plans and their health care coverage. It cut the pay of most public sector workers. Were you there at the Capitol in 2011? What do you remember? 800-642-1234. Angelina Cruz and Justin Delfaz are labor group presidents representing public schools in Racine and Green Bay, respectively. And they're with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Marcus now in Madison with a question. Hi, Marcus. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. As is well known, your power as a worker does not lie in your ability to vote. It's in your ability to stop production when necessary. Why are the Wisconsin teachers unable to use the strategy that was used successfully in Chicago, Arizona, Virginia, all over the country during this period? Why was there no strike? We engaged in symbolic protest, marched around, sang songs, basically had the same effect as if you had been tailgating. It was symbolic, empty protest, accomplished nothing.
Marcus, I'm going to pause here. Angelina, why weren't there strikes?
In 2011, I'll do my best I can with that. I was not even a local leader in my own union, so I can't speak to what was happening at the statewide leadership level. Mm-hmm. I was just I was 8 years into my career. I was protesting at the Capitol. I was very upset. And to be frank, I agree with our friend on the phone's assessment. We should have, I could speak personally. I was ready to take action that way. But I mean, we all know that means something needs to be done collectively. And I don't know where it fell apart in 2011, but I agree.
Yeah, Justin, how would you respond there to Marcus?
Yeah, I would say I'm kind of in the same boat as Angelina. I was an active member, but was not in a leadership position. And I would say, I don't want to speak for Angelina, but I would guess that Act 10 is part of what inspired us to, you know, get more involved and get into our leadership positions. I would say a big part of the reason, you know, I wasn't involved in the decision either, but I would say a big part of the reason is, well, first of all, strikes are illegal, you know, in Wisconsin for teachers. And I would also say that, you know, we had a vast amount of our teachers that don't want to go on strike because they want to be there in the classroom for their students. So it was kind of a tough situation for anyone, because the last thing teachers want is to hurt their students. But at the same time, you know, we wanted to protect our rights to collectively bargain. So it was a tough situation, I'm sure, for the leaders at that time.
I wonder, Angelina, do you see generational shifts, generational differences in older and younger teachers in how they feel about their work, how they feel about Act 10?
To to be frank, I think newer teachers, we have, in my local at least, we have not, I'd say for the past maybe 5 years, really had to dwell too much on talking about Act 10 and what unionism was prior to that, because these younger teachers have no idea what Act 10 even is. So while it was very relevant to me, at, you know, 5 years after it happened, we had, you know, we have batches of new teachers coming into the profession that have no idea what it was like before Act 10, don't even know that Act 10 is a thing. And so it is encouraging. I would like to point out that our unions are very much still here. We are very much still alive. And for newer teachers to recognize the value of unionism post Act 10, and we know what that means, I find it's very heartening and important, I think, to elevate that.
Justin, do you think Act 10 has affected your union's ability in any way in terms of perhaps giving it more fuel, giving it more mission, if you will?
So I would say that things have definitely changed. We've moved from more of a, you know, an industrial model of unionism, you know, dealing with contracts, to more of a professional and social justice model. And that's really what our early career educators want. I mentioned before, you know, some of the professional development offerings that we do. We've really become focused on social justice for our students. So, you know, we're really focused on different things. And one of the things I would say is that I feel that the members that we have are more invested in the association. It's not, you know, a couple people sitting behind closed doors negotiating a contract anymore. It's that collective voice, and you need that collective voice now without the ability to collectively bargain, to advocate for your members and to keep people in the profession.
Let's go to Todd now in Montello. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My wife was a teacher in the Montello School District for 43 years. At the time that this Act 10 thing was going on, the reason they did not strike was because most of the teachers thought it would do more harm to the kids' education than it would do to help them, because they knew the political situation at the time. The other thing I would make a comment, at the beginning of your show, you said Scott Walker was the architect of this, and he had nothing to do with architect. The ones that brought this about was the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They were the ones with the brains behind the whole thing, because they knew that sooner or later, with the money being short as it was, their members would start being taxed at a rate that was more realistic than it is even currently.
Todd,
thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, Todd, thank you. Let's bring in Dave now in Eau Claire with a story. Dave, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, what is your story?
Well, I got several family members that are teachers, and I feel really bad what happened to the teachers. I mean, Scott Walker, but how it came to the municipalities, everybody says, well, it ain't going to come to city workers or state workers, and it did. They stripped us of everything that we ever had. We were down to Madison protesting quite a bit, peaceful. But when we went to bargain with the city, they said, no, Act 10, we took away all your rights, overtime.
And Dave, I have to jump. Yeah, I need to jump in here because we have only a few seconds left. Justin, looking at COVID, if Act 10 had never happened, how might Wisconsin schools have navigated the pandemic differently?
As far as we're concerned in Green Bay, I honestly don't think it would have made much of a difference. We're fortunate to have a good working relationship with our district administration, and we've been able to advocate to stay virtual for the safety of our students and our members and our community. So I don't think it would have changed a whole lot in our particular situation.
And Angelina, very quickly for you, how do teachers feel about being in the classroom?
So we are still teaching and learning remotely. We have a return date of March 1st, but I just would like to clear, I feel like there's this misconception that teachers aren't teaching and kids aren't learning. Teachers have been working around the clock to meet the needs of kids and their families as best they can in this virtual environment. And they're very fearful to return to the classroom right now without proper mitigation strategies in place and vaccinations.
Thank you both for joining us, Angelina Cruz, Justin Delfaz, presidents of teachers unions in Racine and Green Bay. Coming up, we have Governor Scott Walker. That's after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have former Governor Scott Walker on the line as we spend this hour examining the results of Act 10. A decade has passed since the law that sharply limited bargaining rights for most government workers in Wisconsin. How did the law change your life or livelihood? 800-642-1234 to join in. Scott Walker is president of Young America's Foundation. That's a group that promotes conservative ideas among young people. He previously served two terms as Wisconsin's 45th governor from 2011 to 2019. Governor Walker, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's good to be indoors today, that's for sure.
Yeah, a decade removed. How do you see Act 10 affecting government and schools in Wisconsin?
Well, our goal 10 years ago today when we first introduced this was to take the power out of the hands of the big government special interests and put it into the hands of the hardworking people of the state and the people that they duly elect to run their local governments, their state government, and their school districts. And that's exactly what's happened. A decade later, we see a latest report this week showed that $13.9 billion worth of savings for local taxpayers.
But MacIver Institute there. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah. And they say just it updated that report from before that goes all the way back to 2011. But it was more than just the financial savings. Certainly, I know as a former local official, it was really frustrating before Act 10 because we would try to do creative reforms, particularly at times when we, prior to me being in office as governor, the state cut aid to local governments, and we tried to be creative and avoid massive layoffs, and we're not able to because of many of the union contracts. This put the power back in the hands of those local officials, the people that we as citizens elect in our state to run our government, and not just for budgetary reasons, but to, for example, staff based on merit, pay based on performance in our schools and our local governments. That means they can pick the best and the brightest and keep them there.
There is the prevailing sentiment from many Wisconsinites that you blindsided them with Act 10. You betrayed them by not talking about this plan in your campaigning to become governor. Should Wisconsin have known Act 10 was coming with your leadership?
Well, that premise is one of the biggest lies of the last decade. If you go back and look in the 2010 campaigns, you can actually see that I ran TV ads about this. I talked about asking public employees, starting with myself, to make somewhere in the ballpark of a 5% contribution for the retirement, a little over 12% for health insurance. That's exactly what was included in the budget repair bill, which is now Act 10. In fact, it applied to me arguably at a higher dollar amount than just about any other public employee because retirement, of course, is based on your salary, your top 3 years. And so I was making that contribution myself, and I said I would during the campaign. In fact, one of the things that got glossed over when that false accusation was brought back 10 years ago was not only did we say it in a TV ad, but several of the unions put out flyers warning their members not to vote for me for precisely this reason. And then later, after we introduced this, ran around telling the media that no one had ever heard of this before. I thought the best response came from Lee Holloway, who at the time was the county board chairman in Milwaukee County, had served with me when I was county executive, was someone I worked with well, but was clearly a liberal Democrat. He said, anybody who's been watching him in county government knows exactly what he was planning to do. And that's exactly what we did. We might not have been what the liberal special interest groups and some of the others wanted, but in the end, we did what we saw needed to be done at the county level. And we knew that it was better than the alternatives. The alternatives at the time, when we came into state government, the budget crisis was, I think, even greater than what we had feared, what had been reported publicly before the November 2010 election. And so we looked at the size of the gap and said, you know, we could lay off 10 to 15,000 public employees, but even though I wanted smaller government, you don't get there through random pink slips, you do it through targeted reform. We could have cut billions of dollars from Medicaid, and even though I wanted fewer people dependent on the government and able to work on their own, in the end, that size of a cut would have hurt children and families and seniors and others, so we didn't do that. And we could have done a massive tax increase, but just as I talked about these retirement and health insurance premiums in the campaign, I also said I wasn't going to raise taxes.
Well, when you look at these...
We didn't want a wet blanket on the economy, so that's the only choice left was really to reduce aid from the state to local governments.
When you look at these could-haves that you list out here, in your 2020 hindsight, in retrospect, would you have changed something about Act 10? Would you support restoring even limited collective bargaining rights for public sector and unions?
Absolutely not. No, even Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the icon of the left in his prime, said he didn't see a role for public employee unions because unions historically were there to protect people from adverse working situations, from extended hours, from unsafe conditions. His point back then, and I remember I got PolitiFact on this because many in the media couldn't believe he said that or believed that. But his point was that on the public sector, you didn't need a union because you're protecting yourself from yourself. The people are the government, not some individual or not some group out there. And so in the end, what we've seen is for teachers, for other public employees, school districts, towns, cities, villages, counties, even the state government, is able to set up systems where they reward people for performance. But I remember back in 2010, the year before I was governor, there were cutbacks. I felt it as a county executive. We tried to do simple things like a couple of 35-hour work weeks, and the union contracts prohibited us from doing that. But I remember vividly there were other cutbacks. For example, in the schools in Milwaukee, prime example, Megan Sampson was one of the best teachers. In fact, I think that year she was named the outstanding new English teacher for the statewide association. And not long after receiving notice of that award, she got a notice she was being laid off. Why? Because the old union contract said the last hired was the first fired, the last in was the first out, even though she had been named one of the best new teachers in the entire state. The mistake I made 10 years ago was I was so eager to fix things, I didn't talk about them. Most politicians talk about them, but don't fix them. And so when I started telling stories like this one about Megan Sampson, or like the school or the city bus drivers in Madison who were making more than the mayor did because of overtime, or the correction officers who were calling in sick and then working the next shift and getting overtime, people across the state said, that's not fair.
So and you're so bringing up examples of gaming the system, which you see Act 10 was able to rectify. I want to just jump in here. We're talking about the 10-year anniversary of Act 10 with its author, former Republican Governor Scott Walker. You can join in. What do you think is the lasting legacy of Act 10? How has it changed your life? How has it changed politics in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Governor Walker, some educators have said Act 10, it hurt morale. It worsened our state's teacher shortage. There was a Wisconsin Policy Forum study. It found younger teachers are leaving the workforce at higher rates since Act 10. What do you have to say to this?
Well, in terms of the morale, I'd say blame the unions. I remember I said it actually at a school, even in the height of the protest, when there were tens of thousands, eventually as many as 100,000 people occupying the Capitol and the Capitol Square. I went around the state at this point early in 2011 and even visited a number of government-run schools. And I remember one place in particular, I was, after visiting the classrooms, went privately and met with teachers that were interested in the teacher's lounge at the end of the day. And somebody said exactly that question. And I said, you may not agree with the policies, but the person who was, or the, not person, but the entity that was responsible for trying to say it was about blaming teachers was the union. They wanted that to energize people to go and protest and to reach out to lawmakers and put the pressure on. I never once said anything but good things about the teachers in our state. Both of my kids were in high school at the time at a public school, Wauwatosa East High School. We loved our teachers, and we thought they did an exceptionally good job. In this case, though, it was, I think typically when I toured schools, I could see the difference between teachers whose spouses often ran their own businesses or worked in the private sector, who, not universally, but in many cases, had a better understanding of what and why we were doing what we were doing, versus those who were maybe both spouses worked in the schools. And remember, at the time, many of those schools, not only were people not paying their match for retirement, many school district employees were paying nothing, not a penny, nothing for their health insurance premiums. And I think a lot of folks around the state at the time, then and even today, would say, hey, wait a minute, I'm paying, you know, $500, $600, $700 a month for health insurance premiums and whatever I can set aside for retirement. It only makes sense that something, most cases we're still talking about going from nothing to $50 a paycheck for health insurance. So still a very, very, very generous package that most public employees in the state get.
I'm going to jump in here. Wisconsin has the widest racial achievement gap in the nation. We're one of the worst states in the nation for Black families, for children of color to grow up in. How effective was Act 10 at helping schools address the gross inequities in the quality of schooling students, you know, in our state?
Well, Act 10, I think in that regard, is somewhat neutral in the sense that, and go back to your earlier question too about morale on that, we've seen teacher shortages across the nation. Act 10 didn't, I don't think there's substantial data that shows that the shortages that other states were facing that didn't do the kind of reforms we faced is substantially different than what we faced in Wisconsin. But on the racial gap, for sure, absolutely, that's a big problem. That's a big problem in urban districts all across America.
Well, how concerned are you about merit pay programs widening inequities between schools?
Well, again, in the cases of some of the schools with the largest racial gaps or some of the schools that have the biggest amount of state aid and spend the most per student. So if it was just about money, Milwaukee, for example, gets some of the largest amount of money from state aid and spends some of the largest amount per student should have some of the best test scores, certainly in the state, if not in the country. But obviously money alone isn't the factor. If that was the case, that would have been resolved a long time ago. There are bigger issues than just whether or not Act 10 is there or not, or even what the pay levels are. There's all sorts of other issues in terms of I remember years ago, one of the superintendents I worked with when I was county executive pointed out that if he could just get every child reading at grade level by the time they were in third grade and living in the same place, not having the migration issues from one, not just from one address to the next, but oftentimes from different schools multiple times a year, that those were some of the biggest challenges out there. And again, those aren't things you solve with spending more money. Those are things that are larger community issues, not just in Milwaukee, but Madison. I remember in 2014, when I was running for re-election, Madison actually had a bigger gap in terms of four-year completion rate for African-American young men than even the city of Milwaukee did. So there are a lot of issues. Those issues have been around for 20, 30 years. We need to continue to work on them. They're problems today, and they're not because of Act 10.
We're talking with former Governor Scott Walker about the budget repair bill that became Act 10 and its repercussions a decade later. You can join in. How has Act 10 helped or hurt your school district? Are you seeing benefits from teachers receiving merit pay? Are schools more nimble now to address challenges? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with former Governor Scott Walker here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with former Governor Scott Walker. On March 11th, 2011, he signed his signature legislation into law, Act 10, stripping collective bargaining rights for most state and municipal employees, including K-12 teachers, but exempting the unions of police and firefighters. This law helps schools and local governments reduce their spending by nearly $14 billion in the new estimate by the MacGyver Institute we talked about earlier. But it came with a price as one of the most polarizing moments in our state history. We heard from Marie in Edgerton, called and couldn't stay with us. And Marie said she's a union employee, glad she does not have to work 2 to 3 jobs to make ends meet. Marie voted for you for the first time around and says, she did not like that the people of Wisconsin were not included in the decision making while debating Act 10. Marie says people were left out of the process.
Well, the ultimate process, like I said, was the election on November 2nd, 2010. I remember at one point, week by week at this point 10 years ago, as the protesters got bigger and bigger, as we started to see them not just be from Wisconsin, but from around the country with the national organizations involved. I remember at one point I was having a press conference in the Capitol at 5, and the crowd was louder than ever. And one of the national reporters said, "Governor Walker, don't you hear the protesters? Don't they have a right to be heard?" And I paused for a minute. I thought that was a pretty legitimate question and said, "Yeah, you know, absolutely they have a right to be heard. This is America. You can protest your government without fear of retribution." But I paused for a moment and said, but let me be clear. While they have a right to be heard, there was more than 1.5 million people across the state who voted for me in that last election. The vast majority of them wanted me to be bold in taking on the issues that we face. And that's exactly what I was doing. And I wasn't going to let the voices of the protesters drown out the voices of all the other people across the state who wanted me to go big and bold in solving the reforms of the state. And so we did. We had an election. We talked about it. I ran TV ads about it. I said the things I was going to do. I said things like raising taxes that I wasn't going to do. And in the end, we had to take action because we inherited, remember, a gap of about $3.6 billion in the budget because of the economy and because of the financial situation that my predecessor, Jim Doyle, and the Democrats who were in charge of the legislature left us with.
Well, Act 10, as you say, it helped the state resolve this immediate budget crisis, particularly on the backs of public workers' income and school funding. My question is this: are schools adequately funded today?
Well, my last 2 years as governor, we were actually able to give them the largest amount of funding they had ever received in state history up until that point. But we did it within a system where those increases, again, by school boards as well as local governments can do the same in other areas, can put those dollars into the best place. I give you a good example that goes beyond just the very reasonable contributions for pension and health care that I myself made and my family had. In fact, I actually made less when you consider those contributions as governor as I had previously as county executive. So, in effect, I took a net cut as well. But it was bigger than that. We allowed, under changing collective bargaining, we allowed school districts and local governments to do things like bid out their health insurance. A good example, Appleton School District saved literally over $3 million, I believe, at the time, just by bidding out their health insurance that previously had been mandated by their union contract, in many cases, like Appleton, mandated for a firm that was affiliated with the teachers' union. Once they could bid it out, that was millions of dollars that could go directly into the classroom to improve education and to support great teachers. So there were a lot of myths, a lot of attacks out there. In the end, though, we were able to put more money in the classroom and give more control to local governments.
We're talking about the 10-year anniversary of Act 10 with its author, former Republican Governor Scott Walker, and taking your insights on the legacy of Act 10, 800-642-1234. Eric is joining us from Beloit with thoughts. Eric, hi, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I was a state employee 10 years ago, and with the Act 10 being implemented, you would think that my coworkers thought the sky was going to fall in. At that time, that's my recollection, we didn't pay a nickel for health coverage, and it ended up being $50 a month, which, in my opinion, was not an unreasonable amount for a state employee to pay. My coworkers referred to the governor at that time as Nazis and things like that, awful things. It was very offensive to me, and I do believe that as was mentioned, a million and a half state citizens shouldn't have to bear the brunt of, you know, they're paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars for the health coverage that they were paying back at that time.
And Eric, let me ask you, did your wages keep up with inflation as a state employee over the years?
The best of my recollection, I believe that I was paid a fair amount to do the job I had.
Eric, thank you for that call. Jonathan now in Milwaukee. Go ahead. Jonathan, hi.
Hi. Well, I think there's one other aspect to this that needs to be addressed, which is beyond the damage that Scott did to our state economically and to the teachers specifically, there was another part of this. There was a whole campaign launched by extremist right-wing radio hosts to damage the reputation of teachers. And I had a lot of friends teaching during that time who would come into school and their children would say to them, their students would say things that their parents were told from these radio shows about how lazy they were, how they got all summer off and they got paid way too much. And the parents would say things at these PTA meetings and at their student teacher conferences. And that whole PR campaign waged against teachers lingers to today. And that is a big part of the damage that Walker did to our state, because before that,
and we're short, Jonathan, we're short on time. Governor Walker, I want you to be able to respond. Go ahead.
Yeah, again, as I mentioned, my kids went to public schools. We love public schools. I remember challenging someone at the time, since just about everything I said at that point 10 years ago was being videotaped, to find a time when I was doing anything but praising teachers, public and private alike. And the things that he just alluded to were things I've heard for decades. I don't agree with. I've lifted up our teachers as great public servants and appreciate what they do. I just wanted to give our local school boards, the people we elect, duly elect at our local levels, the opportunity to do that. I would go back to what I pointed out before. I think the union bosses, more than anyone in this discussion, were to blame for things like what the caller talked about, because by forcing this issue, by driving a wedge, by telling teachers and others that they were being targeted, even though they weren't, this unfortunately led to that, and it's taken time to deal with that. But today, teachers can do well.
We only have a couple seconds left. Do you plan to run for governor or the U.S. Senate next year?
In 2022, I'm going to continue to do our work through Young America's Foundation. And I'm a quarter century younger than Joe Biden, so I got plenty of time if I choose to run at some point in the future, but it won't
we'll be. We'll end it there. Thank you for joining us. Scott Walker, president of Young America's Foundation, and this is the Ideas Network.